find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, LeaderShield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsewheels.com is a cost-effective, time-saving pain relief revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsewheels.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsewheels.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsewheels.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
At the races with Steve Bick.
Enough!
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, second half, and didn't expect it to be the to be 90 minutes in at this point, but Rich Migliori is standing by. He's actually been standing by for 24 and a half hours. Good morning.
No, not at all. I really enjoyed, I got a chance to listen for a while yesterday because I was in the car. That's where I have satellite. Your timing's perfect. I got the barn done. I unloaded a bunch of grain and stuff, so I'm all caught up, and I'm sitting on a bench watching my two little dogs romp around. If I come back as one of my dogs.
Yeah. Speaking of which, how's the one that had the surgery?
He's doing well. The only thing is he can only go out like four times a day on the leash, which he's not happy about, and he's got to be crated the rest of the time. But he's doing really well. He's actually putting weight on that leg already and wanting to chase birds, which is a good sign, but I can't have him do it because he's not healed yet. But he's actually doing really well, though, Jack. He's my boy.
Well, there you go. It's good to hear. And speaking of excellent timing, Rich, I couldn't wait to talk to you and Tony Black, obviously, on Thursday. We can only, broach this Derby result by bringing up a journeyman rider that is widely unfamiliar to people, that was just excited about even participating in Derby, and then turned in a ride that Arcaro would gush over. Your thoughts?
As good a ride as you will ever see. It is incredible. He had to make a few critical, a blink of an eye decisions, and they were all right. And listen, this guy can ride. He rode 226 winners last year.
Yep.
People have this tendency to dismiss riders at lower level tracks. Who are they riding against? It's harder to ride, lower level horses, horses with infirmities, horses that are tougher to handle when they get down to that level because, they either are a little ill-tempered or cranky because they have those infirmities, those problems that they're dealing with, which all athletes deal with. Track's not as good. Maybe some rider's not as good. It's harder to succeed on circuits like that than people realize. I've been talking a lot with Jose Gomez in New York, and I guess there's some talk about him going to Monmouth for the summer, and I keep on telling him and Kelly Breen and Angel, his agent Cordero, and I have had the conversation. It's a mistake. You learn more and you improve when you ride with better riders. And yes, the competition is going to be tough, but if you're going to make it and you're going to belong, you pick up good habits, the way to prepare, how to approach things, how guys do things. You'll pick up those things. This guy was, as far as I'm concerned, always a good rider. It's just he never had the stage to show it off, and what I'm getting the biggest kick out of is its first graded stake win comes in the Kentucky Derby. I mean, it's just phenomenal. It's like I really was so taken with all of that, and you could see at the eighth pole when he had to angle out quickly around Messier because it looked like for a second he might try to go inside. I'm glad he didn't because I think he might have got stymied. And the way he did it coming out over heels, and then he didn't Like, he finished strong, but he didn't go crazy. He didn't lose his mind. You know, to be in that moment and still have the presence of mind to ride and finish the way he did, and change holds, and honestly, I'm blown away. It's sensational. I really got a huge kick out of it. And listen, that's a lot of money. I was listening to you last week talk about constructing tickets, right? And which is admittedly my weakest part of my handicapping gambling. So I finally honed in. I had like three horses. I told you all along, but the two that really, I said, Epicenter, Zandon, that this is it. So I was listening to you construct the ticket. I said, I made Oaks Derby doubles, $20 doubles, Secret Oath, who I loved, to those two. Then I went those two, because I couldn't get in as depth as you were saying, you know, how to spread it around. I just said, I like them. I bet an exacta box, those two. And then I bet tries, those two, 1-2 with everybody. And then right. Supers, those two, you know, with everybody, right? So I'm looked up at the 316 flight. I drove home after doing America's Day at the Races because I wanted to be home to watch the Derby. I got, you know, done about 3:30 and watched the Ranger game, which, you know, was heartbreaking. But anyway, that's another story. And when I saw the 21 moving, I picked him up about the, you know, just inside the quarter part. I said to Carmelo, this is awesome. He's the first. Man, I'm going to be able to try in the Super. And then he just kept going and ran by them. So it cost me, but I still loved every moment of it, and I'm super happy for Sonny Leone that, and maybe now, you know, people will pay more attention. And again, don't discount guys just because they ride. In fact, there's a lot of decisions that go into those things. Part of it is obviously getting opportunities on a bigger stage or at a bigger venue, and lifestyle. Talk about Tony made decision that, you know, the Mid-Atlantic was where Tony could have went anywhere and rode. In the winter, I chose to stay in New York the majority of winters because I enjoyed being home. It's not easy riding at Aqueduct in February, January, you know, especially when the inner track was, you know, in use, that the combination of salt and pea gravel that was in there. Yeah, I come home with blood vessels broken all over my body from getting hit with kickback. You know, it's not that, oh, he can't go to Florida and compete. When I went to Florida, I competed fine. That was a choice I made. It was better for my family, better for me on a personal level. So there's so many things that go into it, but this guy was awesome on the day. Sonny Leone, I don't know you. I hope I get to meet you. I got his number from Ramon Dominguez because we're going to do something with him. Terrence Dicci, one of our producers, doesn't live far from Belterra. He's going to go get an interview with him that we're going to, you know, run a feature on him on our show. I'm thrilled for him. Just absolutely thrilled for him. And it was a totally satisfying result, even if I lost money.
Yeah. Well, exactly. Very easy to be happy. And when you think about it took me probably part of the ride home on Sunday to realize who I was thinking about when I was trying to equate what he accomplished here. And even though it's a very different kind of a race, in fact, it's the absolute opposite, the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint from a couple of years ago at Keeneland when Glass Slippers won with Tom Eaves. And Nick Luck, essentially, is the one who you know, edified on who Tom Eaves was, but you know he was a career journeyman that turned in. I mean, Nick Luck said it was the greatest ride of his career to win that Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint that day, and it just to me, as I said yesterday, Rich, I don't know if it was at the point when you were able to listen, but this really does go to, you know, speak to the scenario that any rider and also any horseman who gets a chance with a horse, you know, to extract these kinds of performances. I mean, everybody's celebrating Sonny's ride, but at the same time, Eric Reed had to have this horse ready to go a mile and a quarter and
run it the way he did with that big finish. So it really speaks to both sides of the coin that you know almost any rider out there could probably in one brief shining moment turn in just a perfect execution.
Oh, absolutely. You see, at the end of the day, it's horse racing. I've never seen a rider get off and put the horse on their back, with all respect to Lafitte Pink Eye, as close as he may have come, or Ruben Hernandez, a guy that should always be spoken about when you talk about riders that could halfway carry a horse home. But it's about opportunity. And listen, Eric Reed has been an accomplished, respected horse person for as long as I can remember. That his name was synonymous with doing good work and having his horses run to the best of their abilities. So, it's about, this is what I always talk to young riders about. You never know when you're going to get an opportunity. You can't control that part of it. All you can do is work hard to get the opportunity, but at the end of the day, you might work a dozen horses for a guy and he doesn't put you on them. You can't control that, but it's your responsibility to be ready for that opportunity when it comes and make the most of it, and that's what we saw on Saturday.
Some other elements of this. What else did you see in this race? Obviously a collapse scenario, but what else did you see in terms of performances and decisions and efforts? Some horses went wide, Rich, that probably lost enough ground to really make a difference. Mo Donegal did not have a great start, kind of bobbled at the break. What else did you notice that?
Well, I think Epicenter got a real good trip. Epicenter did get a good trip. He moved a little bit into the teeth of a very fast pace, but he got a really, really good trip under Joel, and Zanon got even a better trip under Flavian Pratt, excuse me. I thought Mo Donegal had the worst of it. The break compromised him for sure. He didn't get away cleanly. You don't want to, no matter what the distance, you never want to give people a head start. Even if you're going to drop back and you're on a closer, you want to break well and allow your horse to do that instead of breaking, a bit awkwardly. But it happens. It's the Derby, big field. He was in there a long time. And then the decision to swing out, turning, coming off the quarter pole, he got beat 3.5 lengths. So if he has the trip the winner has, gets to save the ground that the winner did, he's right in the mix too. As what Barbara rode as well, another one that, he was actually outside of Mo Donegal and Irad kind of pushed him out, forced his way to the outside, and the two of them were like 10, 11 wide turning for home. Other than that, and the crazy fast pace, I thought the race was fairly cleanly run considering everything. Johnny moved a little early with Messier, but he had an opportunity that presented itself, and in a 20-horse field, when opportunities present themselves and you can go forward, I think you're almost obligated to. The winner was good, and I'm so glad I did hear this part of it, that you and Eric Reed addressed him savaging the pony and people coming down on the outrider, which, obviously you're not, you've never been in that position with a horse savaging you, and just how dangerous a situation that whole scenario was. I mean, it got to a point, it was a life and death situation. And I've been savaged, and I got thrown and was on the ground and got savaged by the horse that threw me. And let me tell you, when you got a 1,000-pound animal bearing down on you with bad intentions, you will do anything you possibly can to get him off of you. And he not only was trying to get him off himself, but his pony was getting tore up. And Blasi's a hell of an outrider and a hell of a horseman. And, people want to jump on. I love these people. They just love, let's find something negative to jump on and make us think about. We can't ever just be happy in the moment. We got to figure out something or dissect something to find the negative. Isn't that a wonderful thing?
It's undoubtedly after this, as wild an outcome as could possibly have been imagined. A horse that literally they had told the security guard at the barn that he could leave. That he didn't have to guard the Derby horse anymore because it wasn't going to be a Derby horse. And then 3 minutes later, he was a Derby horse again. The way he got in, the way this all came down. But yeah, that's the thing that people are going to dwell on. There's been some really stupid things said and written. You know, as I said yesterday and repeated, Greg Blasey is widely thought of as the top outrider, not just at Churchill, but anywhere. And the number of times that he's you know, bolted after horses that have dropped riders in the morning. I mean, there's tons of famous photographic captures of, you know, of Greg, you know, grabbing a loose horse and you know, ending a potential situation. I mean, some people, Rich, said, "Oh, he should have just let the horse go." In the Sonny Leone's arms were hanging limp by his side. Sonny was so wrung out that he could barely do anything to, you know, to help restrain Rich Shrike.
I love those people. You know, yeah. You've ever been in a situation like that? You know, I love people say, "Well, I ride. I know I ride." Yeah, you've ridden racehorses. You've ridden a horse just now at going a mile and a quarter and used every ounce of your physical and mental strength, and you're sapped to the gills. And plus, there's a tradition of the outrider bringing back the winning horse from the Derby with Donna Brothers interviewing them, and he was just trying to do his job when the horse turned on him. So, you know, and I liked Eric's explanation of a horse that was still in you know, fight mode. He was so pumped up. And you know, it annoys me to no end, and people say things with such a certainty that have never been in those circumstances. But they know, they're the experts, you know. And like now, like I'm sure my Twitter will blow up at how I'm, you know, how wrong I am. Yeah, but let me tell you, when you're on the ground and you got one on top of you, then come talk to me.
I appreciate you bringing that up. I'm quite you know, quite willing to just let it fade away already. But you know, there's
I had to say that because it bothered me what I saw was written, and then listening, here's the trainer of the horse thanking him, and you know what, I thought that was classy. That hey, my horse could have gotten loose, and then what happens in the mode he's in? Then what happens? I mean, so people just think a little bit. Why do people feel like they have to throw their hat in the ring with something that they, you know, in that moment? How about sit back, reflect, and think about what actually took place, and then you still feel so compelled that your opinion means more than keeping it to yourself? Then go ahead.
Thank you. Good job.
All right, sorry. Am I ranting?
No, you were great. That was great. Let's talk about the Phillies and Friday too, Rich, and some thoughts about Secret Oath. That essentially, you know, got right back to the A race that you know, that we had seen from her in the against other fillies in the Martha Washington and the Fantasy. You and I talked, I know, about Contreras and the situation that finds Louis Saez aboard Secret Oath, and I hate to, you know, I hate that he didn't get this opportunity, but. You know, some thoughts about the way Secret Oath performed.
Well, listen, she should have been a lot closer to the Arkansas Derby. She ran huge that day. You know, she got compromised at the break, and then she ran into trouble, and then she swung wide, which she did the same thing in the Oaks as far as you could see. Louis said, you know what, I'm going to put her in the clear when we get to the backstretch. It seemed like that was his game plan, and she was traveling so well. But there was continuity to the run. There wasn't stops and starts, and it takes a lot out of a horse. When you have to, you know, hit the brakes and then pick it up again, and then pick it up as quickly as he did after hitting the brakes. Ramon Dominguez to me was the most incredible rider. He could steady a horse and then incrementally get them back into that rhythm where they're using themselves properly, and it really cost them. But when you got to pull up and then you go all in, which is what happened in Arkansas, you can't have anything left. So, he made that wide sweeping move. He had a ton of horse, but again, there was continuity to the run. And she's just very good. And she's just very, very good. I mean, she lost ground, but he didn't want to have to, break her momentum. Obviously, knew what he had in the Mesh ran extremely well.
Rich, I'm losing you. You're kind of fading. I don't know if it's location where you are with the phone.
Yeah, wait, you know what? Let me walk back to the barn. I was following my dogs around by the woods. Hold on. can you hear me better? Any better now?
Yeah, it's a little bit lower. It was just sort of lowering and getting lower and lower. It was like you were literally walking off into the distance.
Is it better now?
Yeah, there you go.
Okay. All right, good. Yeah, no, I literally was following my dogs into the woods, and when I get back to the back of the property, it starts to lose cell service. So, no, I'm just saying that, she was good. She's very good. I loved her. She was a single for me off of the Arkansas Derby. And listen, Kieran McLaughlin's Luis Saez's agent. He came up under Wayne. I mean, he was with Wayne for many years, and there's a relationship there, and this business is about that, relationships, and, you can go back through the years, who you worked with, who you have an affinity for, who you have chemistry with. I mean, it's just, and Louis's a big race rider. Louis's a guy who's proven it on the major stage already, and they only have one chance to win the Oaks as a three-year-old, right? That's it. Yeah. It's not like, the Woodward, the Jockey Cup Gold Cup, where they might have another shot at it, the Beldame. They've won. Connections are going to do what they need to do to give themselves that best opportunity, and she was very good on the day. I think that people that were so quick to write off Echo Zulu have to give her a bit more respect than she was getting before the race, because she ran a bang-up race. I do think she has made a proper step from 2 to 3. I don't think she maybe really wants a mile and an eighth, and particularly with a stronger pace as was on with Dugiri in there.
Well, and Steve Asmussen earlier this morning confirming she'll head to the Acorn and the test, and I think everybody that, I don't want to say was against her, quote unquote, but and there was plenty of reason to to not accept a short price on her in the Oaks, but turning her back, I think people will be very excited, especially given what she accomplished already at Belmont and Saratoga.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely, and but again, I go back to Secret Oak. I actually thought, I think she paid $10.40 was a generous price on her. I was very happy getting that, because I thought she should have been the favorite off the Arkansas Derby.
Well, and I had people ask me, and I kind of I made a particularly stupid maneuver late finishing up the analysis on Friday, and essentially kind of substituted nostalgic for her just on physical properties. Nostalgic had looked very good. The mornings getting ready for this. I did okay because I keyed off of Desert Dawn. That was a crazy price, 50-1 on her. That was like insane.
Yeah, definitely. But that's that's the beauty of Oaks and Derby weekend. Those 2 days is that you can find those nuggets. They get lost, and there's so many people betting that aren't betting on a daily basis, or so it's that's one of the. Which I never thought of until the last few years. I never paid attention to any of that stuff. But obviously, in my new role, and also the fact that I've got an Ira Betts account,
you're going to be out there firing. Let's poke through this. Olympiad, obviously. We haven't had a chance really to talk about that Ali Sheba, but Olympiad continues to look exciting. Heading for some showdowns on the, on the middle distance front. That was something. Oh, Jack Christopher. You got to have some Jack Christopher thoughts.
Wow, Jack Christopher, man, he's just so good. And, how about he was a bit compromised at the break and, took some kickback and came up, got to the clear. And, he was just very, very, listen, he probably was the best two-year-old last year. Yeah, right? I mean, to break his maiden and win the champagne the way he did, and then, but it shows you when owners and trainers do the right thing by their horse, they whoop, something's not right, pull the plug, we'll be back next year, and not go crazy trying to make the Derby or whatever, just okay. There's a whole second half of the year. He's got a little of that freakish dimension to him that you feel like, you know, he might be really, he's special, but like a whole nother level.
Well, did you hear Jad after the race?
I didn't. I actually was driving home, and I listened to the call, but I didn't get to hear any of the post-race.
Well, I'm sure I reached out to Chad this morning. He's tied up this week, so we may get him in Baltimore for a sit-down. But he said the horse that at this point in his career Jack Christopher reminds him of is Ghost Zapper.
Oof, wow.
And
he was around Ghost Zapper with Bobby, and wow. Yeah, that's exciting. You see, that's like the fan in me comes out when I hear things like that, because I'm just excited to, to see it going forward. And Saratoga, is like, after the Derby, I actually start thinking about Saratoga. Once people wait till after the Belmont, it's like, hey, we're not that far away.
No. This was really... this was good. Papa Cap ran that was actually, it turned out to be a clever gambit, showing speed the way he did, couldn't withstand Jack Christopher, but was able to turn back everybody else, Mike Prankster and anybody else that was trying to make up ground. Andy's going to join us in a couple of minutes, Rich, and I suppose I can touch on some of the other the Belmont action. But let me ask you first, because Cody's Wish with a big win in the Westchester. So here's Belmont with both Olympiad and Cody's Wish to deal with. Chad had, for those that missed it, back at Belmont. In addition to Chad's performances of horses like Jack Christopher and also that exciting Speak of the Devil, who won the Distaff Turf Mile, and on Friday, too, Bleecker Street was tremendous, winning the Modesty.
Yeah.
He had three stake wins over the weekend at Belmont. He won the Ruffian, Search Results snapback, and there was L'Imperator winning the Ford Marcy, and Virginia Joy won the Sheep's Head Bay.
Yeah, I was obviously happy about Virginia Joy winning the Sheepshead Bay. Trevor McCarthy, my son Joe's his agent, that was great. She was like just so much the best in that group. And I made one mistake. Now that you bring that up, L'Imperator, I really liked him because he had a soft ground race in Europe. That I mean, the course we had Saturday at Belmont was as slow and bottomless. From the rain, if they weren't stakes, they would have never been on the turf. And just to give you an example, right, Virginia Joy is 20 seconds off of the track record, you know, and she won by 9, so it tells you just how boggy the ground was. And I had made a note earlier in the morning when I was in the office doing my work. I said, man, I'm going to bet on L'Imperator today because he's going to catch ground like he caught in Europe in that one race where he actually ran really well. And I got off the set. We were in the indoor set because the weather was just so nasty. And I went into the Belmont room there to say hi to Jay Oranger, the owner, a guy played Petey Bianchi. And he was with Bruce Fox, Adam Fox, who plays for the Rangers' dad. So I went in there and I sat with them. Oh, he's a big racing fan, Bruce Fox. He loves it. He's there quite a bit. And I sat with them for a little while and just chatting about the Rangers' chances that night with Pittsburgh. And then I took off to come home. I didn't stay down Saturday night. I said, I'm done 3:30. Let me get home, have a nice meal, see Carmella and watch the game and watch the Derby at home. And I completely forgot to bet him. And what do you pay, like $27 or something? It just ran out of my mind because I was like exchanging pleasantries and, I don't have any problem talking, and it completely slipped my mind.
Well, anything else that we missed at Belmont?
No, I mean, I think the racing is very good. I think, watching Flavian Pratt settle right in, which sometimes there's an adjustment, different track, different place, different routine, different riders. Just, man, you want to talk about, this is as good a colony as I can remember since, you know, you had Angel Cordero, George Velasquez, Jacinto Velasquez, Eddie Maple, Jerry Bailey, I mean, on and on and on. This is that, so reminiscent of that colony, and you have such a thread of young riders that are this good that potentially can continue to get better. I mean, if you're a gambler and or an owner trainer, you should be very, very happy because you have a lot of options. You can go 15 deep and come up with a real good rider.
Well, looking forward to getting down there for a couple of, or waiting for a spot for your favorite, for Kid Chocolate. And did I talk to you? I didn't. I guess we did talk. We talked about Shirzando,
We talked about Shirzando, and I was so happy that, you know, Trevor picked up that mount. I've been on, like, talking about that horse. I told Joey in the middle of winter, you need to get on this horse. He just had really compromising trips. I mean, obviously, getting on the turf is, I think, you know, one of the main reasons, but he's been hard luck, and subtly, not like where it would hit you over the head. If I was riding, I would have been all over you and Gary to ride that horse in February.
Well, he's on now, and he said he said that he'd ride back, so we're excited to have him. There's actually a couple. There's two choices. There's a 7 furlong and there's a 6. The 6 the day before Belmont Day.
Well, I am sure Sonny Jim Siaka will figure out the best spot.
you know, by the way, one thing I didn't have a chance to mention before we go, I ran into, you know, Louis Laz was there, and of course he's part of Adamo, the new import, Chad.
Right.
With a group of partners. And Louis confirmed that they're going to go to Baltimore for the Allaire DuPont with the steak filling. Yeah.
Yeah, awesome. Good. That's great. Yeah, we all had dinner. I had dinner with Gary. We went to the game, and the next night we all had dinner with Louis, and you know, talking about all that. It's, you know, we're so lucky because we share a passion with so many people, and we go have these good times and conversations, and these horses give us so much. We're so blessed.
Rich Migliori, everybody. Mig 4450. All right, go chase those dogs. It's a gorgeous day up here in the foothills of the Adirondacks. So down by you, it must be equally gorgeous. Enjoy the day. And Rich, thanks so much.
Thanks, Steve. I'll talk to you next week. Bye.
Rich Migliori, folks, and insights on, you know, particularly with Sonny, Sonny Leone's ride, which looking forward to talking to him. He's down in Florida with the wife and the baby. I've got a picture of a rider with a wife and baby, but it's Jose Ortiz and Tiny KB. So, which is actually, I should put that up. It's really cute. I will put that. I haven't put out my gallery of Derby photography yet. So, Andy's going to be next. Andy Serling. Looking forward to Andy's thoughts on the weekend. Similar kind of a, usually we split these conversations up, but Rich didn't have room yesterday for Rich. It just gotta accommodate when it comes to, you know, when it comes to the Derby winning trainer and his schedule, because it's always they're always in demand. And did I retweet the Today Show? I don't know if I did. I know I liked it. I should retweet that for those if you haven't seen it. I'll dig it back up and retweet that from yesterday. And he sounded great too just now in the last hour, Rick
Dawson.
So, Andy Serling from the New York Racing Association. Andy, good morning.
Morning, Steve. How you doing?
Excellent. It's so much fun to. You know, I know that some people probably are already ready to turn the page on the Derby Oaks weekend. But, you know, when you get to hear from people like the owner and the trainer, it just, and, you know, hear how they feel about it. I mean, that's what makes the game special.
Okay.
You don't think it? You don't think so?
I'm happy for them. I'm not sure I'm supposed to say beyond that.
Your impressions of the way this race was run and its outcome?
Well, I mean, it's just one of those incredibly unusual situations where you have an extraordinary meltdown. And, you know, as I said many times before the race on air in my video, that a king of the race was really what the least likely winner and the eventual last place finisher did in the race, because if Summers Tomorrow was aggressive early, then it was going to set things up for closers. And, I mean, he was beyond aggressive. And with the surprising addition of the Japanese horse, not that he figured to be a factor in the race, but he did. He was a factor in the race. He heated the pace up even more. And then John Velasquez sort of inexplicably being overly aggressive with Messier as well. And it, you know, was a cocktail for a complete and total meltdown, which is what we had. I mean, in a lot of ways, the surprising thing is that Mo Donegal didn't pick pieces up better than he did. It's sort of surprising the winner was able to badly outrun him in the stretch. And the simplification could have benefited from it as well. I mean, I know they finished fourth and fifth and relatively close, but each of them was presented with a golden opportunity. I mean, Zandon's a good situation as well. A little bit closer than they were, and perhaps even a little farther back, he might have won, but that's conjecture. He also had a little bit of trouble at the start, which they didn't have. But I do think that Epicenter ran extraordinarily well when you consider that he was far and away the closest, and all you do is look at the chart to see what a topsy-turvy race it was, and that he made the first move. And first movers, you know, he made the first move in the pace in the same way that Normandy Invasion did against Orr. And while Normandy Invasion ran a credible fourth, it was nowhere near as credible a finish as Epicenter. So Epicenter was the sort of in-race hero. The winner's gotten a lot of attention, justifiably so, and as is the rider, who miraculously made every right decision at every turn. But it took an extraordinary event, and I haven't gone back far enough to look at other meltdowns, but I mean, there are three that come to mind in this century. There's Benarcos, who never won another race and was never competitive in either two Triple Crown races. There was Orr, who never won another race and wasn't a major factor in the Triple Crown race. They could just be third in the Belmont, like fifth or sixth in the Preakness. And there's one other obvious meltdown that I'm missing in there, too. Giacomo, who I think won one of the races much later in his career, was a particular factor in the Triple Crown races. And all those horses were long shots. Well, Orb was not, and it was Narcos. But they all took advantage of extreme situations. And to be honest, all of them were reasonably credentialed racehorses in ways that Rich Strike wasn't. Now, listen, maybe Rich Strike has turned into some sort of freak overnight. Highly unlikely, in all likelihood, based on, handicapping going forward. He's not going to be a factor in the Preakness. And, we'll see what he does going on through his career. And I wish him the best of luck. But this was an extreme situation. And all the credit to him and his connections for getting him to run as well as he did, considering he outran Mo Donegal, he outran Simplification. I probably should watch the race a couple more times. I've only watched it a few times. And see other horses. I know Nick Tamaro felt that Smile Happy ran a little better than maybe his finish suggested, and I value Nick's opinion, so I want to look at him. He's a horse that benefits from less distance, never really likely to be a mile and quarter horse given his pedigree, but he probably could be a horse that cutting back could do very well. But I think it's hard to envision a scenario, and I imagine the majority of handicappers have said this before, whether on your show or other places, where Rich Strike is successful in the Preakness. And some can say, well, look at Mind That Bird. Well, first of all, I'm not sure Mind That Bird won a meltdown. And well, he won the Belmont, the Derby by like a pole. And more importantly, the Preakness was a meltdown. People just don't realize it because one of the most extraordinary racehorses to run in everybody's lifetime, some refuse to admit it for their own personal issues, but Rachel Alexandra dueled with the eventual Breeders' Cup sprint winner of the following year, big drama, and she still did what she did in the Woodward, where she was on the pace and outbound and still won. You know, the most extraordinary racehorses have been able to do that, which is like Holy Bull. Seattle Slew almost did it against Exceller, for all intents and purposes did. So, because they did something unusual, I think some people missed out, but that race basically melted down. And he was able to get second, and it wasn't a particularly strong field behind her. Now, how strong this Preakness field depends on whether Epicenter runs back or Zandon. You know, I know that both it's on the table for both of them, but at Red, we'll see. But I find it unlikely that we'll see the same kind of, you know, insane pace that we saw in the Derby.
But really, points well made, and it's funny that you've talked about the Mind That Bird Preakness, because I was trying to, at the start of the show, I was trying to equate the outlandish price point of the winner Saturday and the interest that generates from the lay public, and then the likelihood that people will follow him to Baltimore and then be deflated when he doesn't perform the same way, or he could perform the same way, and if the race doesn't have the operative scenario, so it's a weird situation that way.
Part of it is a failure by racing to properly put things in perspective. And, as we talked about in 2013, there was an enormous missed opportunity. And it falls on NBC in covering these races to do it. And with all due respect, while they have brilliant analysts, and, there's nobody in the game with pain I respect more than Randy Moss's, but whether or not they use him to his fullest is up to them. But that was a situation when we sort of anointed because of the connections, et cetera, Orb is the next superstar in the game, whereas anybody realistic within the race said, no, he won a meltdown. And the horses you wanted a speed horse going forward. And lo and behold, the only speed that ran back the Preakness was Oxbow, which I was smart enough to bet. And the horse who set the pace in the Derby came back in the Belmont, and that was Palace Malice, and he won it. I was too stupid to bet on him. But this was an opportunity to explain it to the public. Now, listen, the vast majority of the public is not going to grasp it, whether they explain it well or not, but I think every one of us in the game has an obligation to be honest in our discussions. And while it's a great feel-good story with Rich Strike and all that stuff is terrific, fine. But still, the average person, anything that can be done to explain it, the average person is just, how did this happen? That this improbable, long shot who should have been 200-1 wins the Derby. Well, there were extenuating circumstances. It's still surprising, but extenuating circumstances and meltdowns lead to these types of situations. And we as an industry have failed in the past to properly explain this as we should have. And it's up to us so that at least the average person can say, Epicenter was close to the pace. In a more fairly run race, Epicenter is going to beat this horse by a significant margin. So when he does, they don't say, this racing, you can't figure it out. It's just random. No, it's not random. What may have happened in this race was a little bit random, but it happened for a reason. And I think we as an industry need to do a better job of explaining to people outside of the game. And some will say, no, you dumb it down. No, dumbing it down doesn't work. Dumbing it down is suggesting that people are watching are dumb. They're not. And if we do a better job, and that goes on all of us, but I think it's important that the best we can, we say this was a flukish experience. We'll see if it happens again, but it's not likely to happen.
No, well framed, Andy, and appreciate it. And I understand that the broadcast management, what their
it's a decision they make that I disagree with. It makes me right and them wrong. But I do think that it's important to be honest and explain this horse won because of the unusual circumstances that are unlikely to be replicated, and explain why. It's not that hard, and there are examples from history, which we just gave in a matter of minutes, just to back it up. It's not that hard, it's not that lengthy, and, the feel-good stories are all great, But at the end of the day, if we don't properly explain the game to people, they're going to be dissatisfied with results. They're going to feel deceived. And it's not deceptive what's gone on. Things are explicable. It's a super interesting game.
Exactly.
Let's stop pretending it isn't.
Exactly. Well, on that topic, you know, the guy that actually is a very effective, obviously a very effective communicator and conduit would be Steve Kornacki, who has now fallen into this role frankly, is a real boon for
Steve's
game.
Steve's not, with all due respect to Steve, and Steve's terrific in everything he does, but he's more of a numbers guy. You've got Randy Moss and Jerry Bailey, who's one of the greatest riders of all time. There should be a problem with the two of them explained.
But I wonder, that's interesting, I wonder if there's a mentality or a thought that you know, that they're too inside, inside the game to...
No, they're not too inside the game. I mean, this is our job. This is our job. Our job as analysts on television to explain that Jerry and Randy aren't too inside the game. That's what you need. People are experts to say, this is what happened. There have been other situations where it's happened. Listen, I'm not going to argue with you guys. I think it's sort of obvious. Nothing against Steve Kornacki is great. And if he wants to be engaged in the conversation, that's fine. But his stuff is more numbers, right? That's what he does.
Yeah.
He does
yes.
But we're talking about analyzing horse racing. I imagine Steve could do it, but Jerry and Randy are the experts, and they are experts.
I've asked this of Tony, but I haven't asked necessarily. I haven't had this conversation. I can't remember with you on the air. When you're planning and anticipating, let's say, big day. It doesn't even have to be big days. I mean, as much television as you're doing on the Fox shows. It's a big show virtually every day, but I mean, how do you lay out the specific timing of how much is devoted to these, to fleshing out explanations of the game? I mean, you do it, you've done it for years.
There's timing to it. There's timing to do it. It's a long conversation, but there's timing to it. It's a question of understanding the importance of issues. Understanding
right.
The importance. There's always time. And to me, it's important.
Well, forever, you've tried to stress that this part of the game,
I think we've made our point.
It's an obligation.
Yes. We've made our point. We can move on.
Very good. All right. Anybody else in that? I put the chart. There it is. Maybe touch on anybody else that.
Well, there's other races we can talk about.
Yeah, there are. If you want to touch on the Philly, Jack Christopher, I thought Saturday that was one of the big highlights.
Well, I mean, it's great to have him back. He was probably the best two-year-old we saw run last year, and obviously had issues that prevented him, but he came back, and, I think Chad's probably hoping to work back from the Haskell and Travers. So, I saw the quote in the story where he's talking about, I haven't talked to him about it, but where he's talking about running him in the Woody Stevens, makes sense, the grade one. He cuts back a furlong, which it's either that or you decide to run him in a lesser race like the Pegasus, I think, at Monmouth. Is a prep for the Haskell, and I'm sure he'll make what he feels the right decision for him. I know, knowing him, he's probably thinking the Woody's the right race, but do I want to go from a mile to 7 furlongs, then to a mile and 8? Would he be better giving him a 2-turn race? He'll have to figure it out, and I imagine he'll make the right call. He usually does, like most top trainers. It's great to have him back, yeah, but it certainly adds to the flavor of this, because more good three-year-olds, the better. And he's certainly one of them that has potential to be the best three-year-old, but we'll see. Long way to go. Instead of the unfortunate decision of running Taba in the Derby is preventing the likelihood that he's going to be a major player in the three-year-old division going forward, whereas if they had taken the right road with him, he could be likely, sort of heading on a collision course towards the Travers with the top horses in the Derby and Jack Christopher potentially, but I'd have to feel after the debacle this weekend. That's an unlikely occurrence based on past history. But I hope I'm wrong, and I hope he shows up. But I'm skeptical.
Were you on the air at that point?
When?
On Saturday.
What point?
When they ran the pate.
I may not have been on the air yet. I don't remember. I saw the race.
Did you see? We didn't show Churchill. No, I know. It was just before 2 o'clock Eastern.
No, I was not on the air at 2 o'clock, yeah.
Did you see Chad's comments after the race?
No, I watched the track.
It was really something. Dave was asking him questions, Dave Greinke, and he stopped. Dave Greinke on NBC? No, this was after everything had, after everybody, the TV had moved on. Dave.
Well, how would I have seen this?
I wonder if there was other camera. I can't remember if there was other cameras still
rolling. Okay, I don't think Dave Greinke was on TV, but go ahead. I don't know if I would have seen that. Unless I had like a spy camera following Dave Greinke around, and I usually do, but the batteries wore out, so I had like a 6-hour gap. But it's back on, so I
do love that. I do. Everybody loves Greinke Cam.
But what are we talking about here? It's like a Twilight Zone episode. But go ahead.
Ghost Zapper.
What about Ghost Zapper?
Chad said Jack Christopher reminds him of Ghost Zapper.
You better get faster. I'd have to hear what the context of it was, because I highly doubt that he was comparing it from a so far talented.
Well, the reference was, it had to do, Dave asked him about the distance decision and, keeping him at one turn for the comeback race and so forth, and he said he didn't want not just one turn, but a mile, as opposed to a sharper sprint. He said he didn't want to, do something shorter with him.
Right, and he heard about his Gold Fever at Belmont this Sunday, but he wanted to run in a longer race. Yeah,
exactly. And then the reference came up to when he talked about stretching out, and he said, well, the horse that he actually reminds me of, and I could tell that Chad was like, he was like thinking, what are people going to think? But he said Ghost Zapper, and Dave and I were like, yikes, wow. And he said, yeah. He said, that's who he
first to have this conversation with? Chad.
He begged off. I asked him this morning.
I don't blame him.
And he begged
off. I checked out with him today. I wish I had that opportunity.
Oh, are you funny? It was pretty cool, actually. Since we're on the sprint front, let's fold in Jackie's Warrior and Obligatory, who came back to Churchill and I don't know how many people she surprised, but she was very, very good.
Well, they were polar opposite races, right?
Yes.
That race featured a fast contested pace, and Jackie's Warrior featured a slower pace in the Kentucky Derby. And Obligatory is a talent. You're laughing, but it's true. It's a fact. Obligatory is a very nice horse, and when she gets a pace to close into in the right situation, she runs well. And we saw that there, and I guess Bill Mott will have to figure out what he's going to do with her forward. I'm sure he wants to get to a race like the Ballerina, but, I don't know if he has anybody else for the, he's got so many good nails, but if he has anybody else for the Ogden Pips, and I think of running her to mile and 16th at Belmont, she ran well last year in the in the A-quarter of a mile, so I have to imagine he's thinking about that here. But yeah, she looked like she wasn't running at all, and she just kicked in at the end, and she got the pace to do it, but she ran. And it was a big win for her. They did a first grade one, I think. And as far as Jackie's Warrior, he is a terrific horse, and I don't in any way want to knock him, but he also had the run of the race. There was no speed signed on. And while I understand this was a wildly fast derby pace, it is interesting that it was faster than the pace that Jackie's Warrior set. And I don't have the charts right in front of me, but I can bring them up. I want to see the difference in the paces between the Obligatory race, which was, what, about the eighth race or something?
It was the 8th. 21-1, 44-4.
No, he went 22.36, 44.95. 22.36, 44.95, and he went 22.76, so he went 2/5 slower, so, you know, 2.5 lengths slower, and 45.5, and, you know, he went over a half a second slower, so
right.
3.5 lengths slower. That's a significant, significant difference, you know. It's kind of interesting. And it's not that Jaguar can't go fast and still run, because he was chasing Life is Good's pace, which was 2 seconds faster, the paces in the Ballerina and the Forgo that day. So it's not like he can't go fast and still be running fast at the end. But when you give a horse of his caliber that kind of tactical advantage, it's sort of impressive that reinvestment risk goes from dead last. And you take a horse like Aloha West, who didn't get the same setup he got in the Breeders' Cup and had to be closer to the pace because the pace was so tepid, he still ran very well to finish third in here, you know, just his first start. So I think there's hope for him going forward, but they're never going to be Jackie's Warrior when he has that kind of pace advantage. The question is when, what speed horse is out there in these sprint races to run with him, and will that horse show up and make him go a little faster like he did in Oaklawn? But in Oaklawn, he was facing a very modest field on a racetrack that was extraordinarily biased towards front end. And listen, I'm a Jackie's Warrior fan and have it since day one, but you do have to analyze the fact that this was basically a walk in the park for him. He wasn't losing this race, though, likely anyway, but he certainly wasn't losing it at that pace. And he wasn't 5-2 like the morning line, nor Jack Christopher 2-1. So hoping to get those morning lines.
A quick survey, too, Andy, of the turf races, which have not gotten... I talked yesterday to Brendan Walsh about Sentin, and we also talked about his nice filly, but Chad would speak of the Devil, which was pretty impressive, with a blitz and stolen base. Flavian Pratt for Three Diamonds and Deuce Greathouse and Mike Maker. Haven't talked about the American Turf much, and Santin in the...
You should have Turf White
Coffee. Yeah, I should.
He talks more than Mike Maker, so I would have him on. You know, more in 2 sentences than in 2 minutes than you'd get him, like, maybe in a half hour. And I'm sure Mike would be happy if you have Kurt on, so it would be great. Obviously, Speak of the Devil is visually impressive. Peter Brand has some stranglehold in this, the older filly and mare division. Of course, they bought for, I guess, a little over $2 million actual dollars, just under €2 million. The filly bought Rougier, who's run this weekend at Belmont, but I think the story is the course. It's a brand new course. I know they had rain, but they took the rails down either Friday or Saturday. I'm not sure what day. And it does seem like anybody raced towards the inside. It was just completely dead down there. And I don't know how true some of the results were, because the Grade 1 Turf Classic was probably about as oddly a run turf race as you'll ever see, and especially for a big race, okay? I'm going to go through. Stanton ran a 101 buyer. Now, he had run two straight 96 buyers, and he was obviously, you know, he'd run well in the Iowa Derby, so he ran his race. Mirror Mission has now run 100, 101, 100. Three straight races, he got 100. They ran. And Hamo, the Euro, that ran a 96 in this buyer race, ran an 89 and finishing third. Okay, fine. Spice Sherl, 93, 98, 104, 88. Tribuven, who had run a series of 100-plus buyers, ran an 82. Public Sector, who was running high 80s and below 90s figures, ran a 73. Busy Channel, who's got mid-80s, mid-90s, etc., high 90s, ran a 68. Cavalry Charge, who was coming off a 96, 95, ran a 67. Kentucky Ghost, who had run 93, 96, 96, 94, 94, 94, 90, he was each. Here were the gaps in this race. The winner won by a neck. Second horse was 6 lengths in front of the third horse. Who was 3/4 lengths in front of the fourth horse, was 3 lengths in front of the fifth horse, was 5 1/4 lengths in front of the sixth horse, was 3 1/2 in front of the seventh, who was a half length in front of a horse that was beat out of by seven. These are the kind of gaps you see in dirt races. You don't see these in turf races, and you definitely don't see them in grade ones that are as competitive as this one. I mean, the favorite was 240-1. Looking at them on paper, you know, they were blindingly similar. This was a race, if you had to bet before it, how much ground, you know, can you bet more or less than three lengths between the first five or six finishers? You probably would have bet less. Yet, the whole field was strung out, and basically, only two ran their numbers. At best, two and a half, and everybody else ran fantastically worse numbers than they run, consistently. Something was wrong. I don't think the whole field decided not to show up. The course was listed as firm. It was obviously on the good side of firm, but it wasn't a bog. These are the kind of things you might see in a bog, like we saw this weekend at Belmont, Saturday at Belmont, but you shouldn't see it on a course that has a little give in it. It's a brand new course. Something was wrong. And I think the takeaway I would have, if I'm a handicapper from this, is this race, the American, whatever they call it, it's not the American Derby, I don't know, whatever the heck it's
American called. Term.
American Term. I would be tossing out, I would be, if you feel that you had a horse ran that race that you want to bet off his prior form, I would have no problem doing that, and I would be very circumspect of taking a lot of the finishes in these races at face value.
I brought this up, and I told people yesterday as part of the overall weekend impressions, I mentioned that you had made that observation to me as I was driving back, and that it. I brought it up with Brendan Walsh, and he, you know, he said he thought it was a little early to be able to have any, you know, real read on what it might mean. But you're the only person I've seen bring it up.
To speak of Devil Race, the first three horses ran their numbers. Lady Spice Spear ran considerably worse than expected. Flower Bolt was point considerably worse than could be expected. The final last finisher, considerably worse than would be expected. So another race where, you know, a turf race, turf stake, where horses just didn't perform. It's a little hard to use a race like the, there was an allowance race earlier in the card. I'm going to take a look at the, it doesn't feel like horses underperformed that dramatically in the American turf, to be honest with you. I think a lot of horses sort of ran their race. It did seem like some down towards the inside spun their wheels, but there were horses that ran their figs. I don't know. It's a very strange occurrence. I don't think I've ever seen anything like that turf classic.
And it's good horses, you mean, yeah.
For the turf races and the other turf races today, I find it inexplicable. If the course, anything's happened the day we're on, I don't know. But that was a really, really strange race. That's all.
Yeah. Well, watch. We'll see how the meet continues.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, obviously, the feeling is, especially nice weather all week, the course will dry out, maybe that'll mitigate, but I'd certainly be watching it as you watch those turf races going forward, and at least based on that, you at least want to be outside. I think that's one thing that we saw clearly from the results of this race, outside movers dominated turf races.
Yeah.
We saw that on Friday as well.
Well, speaking of Friday, some thoughts about the Oaks. While we're doing this,
Secret Oath has been terrific, and she was a sort of logical horse, and I thought she ran really well. I think it's arguable that we moved a little soon with her, and she still was able to win. I thought Echo Zulu ran sensationally well, finishing fourth. I don't disagree with what I read the Connection saying, that they're focusing on shorter races. We talked about this beforehand. You know, was she going to be a horse out of this that you're pointing towards races like the CT Oaks in Alabama, or is she an Acorn Test type? I agree with them that she's probably a horse that's better going shorter. You know, we'll see going forward, but she, to me, she didn't lose any luster in her loss and perhaps gained some. I thought Ness ran fine, but I thought she had every opportunity to win the race. Just wasn't quite good enough. Not surprisingly, I think the distance probably got to Kathleen O. I think she's a horse that I know that the Acorns will be a tough race, but that's a race that I think she's designed for, those mile races. I imagine Todd will be looking to, you know, keep Ness going longer. And, you know, by the time she runs next time, Secret Oath will probably run five or six times. Maybe she'll get a little weary at some point, depending on what Wayne does with her. But, yeah, that was a satisfying race, logical horses, unlike the Derby. You know, the horse that you and I talked about, one of the horses you and I talked about was a long shot, the sort of crazy price on the third place finisher, who had some credentials in her last race. She probably should have been, 20-1 in there, not 50-1. It's sort of laughable to look at the chart and see the horse that she was considerably longer priced with. It really kind of no hopers. But I thought it was a very logical race and a satisfying result. You know, with Wayne winning, it was a good story, and you know, Luis Saez, and Kieran's his agent. And Kieran, of course, would work for Wayne. There's a lot of good stuff in there.
Agreed. A couple of other spots in here. From Friday, we talked to Asmussen about Pauline's Pearl. He's going to try to keep Carriere and her separate.
I saw that. He's more inclined to run Pauline's Pearl in the Phipps and maybe Carriere and then the Fuller Lee. I'm surprised by that. And they're both closers. Pauline's Pearl got a great one this year. To me, I would run Carriere in the Phipps because the mile and 15th one turn races figured to be more favorable to her because they figure to have stronger paces. I don't think much matter. She'll probably win the Fleur de Lis, but it's not that a race is going to do a lot for her resume going forward. She'd already won races, those races, you know what I mean?
So yeah.
I would have shown, but, you know, Steve's a pretty good trainer and pretty good at putting his horse in the right races, so he doesn't need my help. Pauline Sproul's ran exceptionally well, by the way.
Yes,
you know,
did.
Joel understood what he needed to do, and I don't, you know, I must say it was only on Joel. He probably got the right instructions also, that she had to be forward because She Dares the Devil was going to be controlling. And he went five wide in the turn to get position and get that 2-3 wide position behind her and to still run her down. I think that it's probably hasn't been appreciated what an extraordinarily good race Pauline Sproul ran. Also, I think it should be noted that She Dares the Devil is not the same horse this year. The good She Dares the Devil wouldn't have lost that race. She would not have lost to Pauline's Peel of Pearls under those circumstances. I'm not knocking Pauline's Pearls. I think if She Dares the Devil had taken a step back, and listen, she's a five-year-old. It's really surprising. But Pauline's Pearls is another one of these classic Asmussen horses. She wasn't that good last year. She has taken a dramatic step forward this year. Clairiere has improved, but Clairiere was one of the leaders in the division. Should have been a finalist over search results, but she was still one of the top five in the division. And, you know, she's taken a step forward this year as well. I don't think it's quite as big a step forward though as Pauline's Pearl has. It's pretty strong too, some for Stone Street.
Big time.
And search results, by the way, found her form again after that disaster on Wood Day. She ran a huge race in the Ruffian. I imagine we'll see her in the Phipps against Malathot and Latruska as well.
Thanks for slipping that in. I do want you to get your thoughts. Olympiad and what now, there's also Cody's Wish to deal with, and Mott's got Speaker's Corner. I mean, yikes.
It's a scary embarrassment of riches for Bill in the four-year-olds in these races. I mean, he's going to have to run them against each other at some point. You know, it's hard to keep them apart. With Cody's Wish, obviously, if you're Bill, you have to ask yourself, did he run so much faster? This horse is consistently running lower 95s, ran a 104, you know, where, and it's a legit, you know, Sound Money ran his race, same figures he's been running, and he destroyed them. He just flipped them off like a gnat, and, you know, was it the wet track? Well, he's going to have to find out with Coach Wish, but he deserves to have an opportunity to find out. As far as Olympiad, he's been terrific. Now, you know, he's got the right kind of trips and the speed and stuff, but he's a good horse. He's not as good as Speaker's Corners, but he's, you know, I imagine you run the Alex Sheba, you're planning to run the Foster, but that's a grade two. And at some point, these horses have to get their chance in grade ones. I imagine he's on a collision course to run the Whitney, and Speaker's Corner will probably stick to the shorter races, so Bill is looking at the Met and the Forgo with him. So that's fine with them, but where the Dolphin, he's going to go to the longer races, and, you know, he may... If he can show he can run these numbers on fast tracks, he may run the Whitney too. And listen, if you're Phil Mott, is it really so bad to have two horses in the Whitney for different connections? He's going to have to take on Tyson Good in all likelihood, but, you know, he's still got to come back, like, and others. But pretty good situation to be if you're Phil Mott right now. You've got some pretty good horses, to say the least.
Andy, before I ask you about Thursday at Belmont and the big $50,000 carryover, the two turf races on Friday, Bleecker Street at even money in that modesty, and then the three-year-old race, which is usually a harbinger of quality, Brendan Walsh there with that New Year's Eve, who looks like she's going to be a handful in the division.
Yeah, absolutely. I haven't really paid much attention to those races. I'll have to at some point, but I don't really have a lot of, you know, Bleecker Street's obviously been good and gotten better, and she seems to be improving. She was able to overcome a pretty, you know, she was clearly best in there. Bobby Sox ran fine. The competition's going to get tougher, you know. It's not like, you know, those, you know, I imagine that Chad's looking at running into New York's a grade one, it's a big purse, it's on the Friday development weekend, and see how she stacks up on what arguably should be a tougher spot. You know, she might have to run against Virginia Joy, who won in the bog and those weird races on Saturday at Belmont. But, yeah, they're good horses. But Chad had a sensational weekend. If he won the Derby,
yes,
it would have been one of the all-time great weekends in training. And it's hard, you know, if you're him, you lose the one that you're so close, and, you know, there's only one Derby, so you end up, you know, really disappointed, and I'm sure the same way that Askerson felt after that race. But you don't want to lose sight of all the other good things that happened at your speed. You won two grade ones during the weekend, and, you know, your Chad, you had this huge weekend here, there, and at Belmont. It was hard, I mean, right? I mean, how do you not walk away disappointed? Because, you were holding the prize. You were standing in the infield holding the trophies. You're either one of those guys. So it's hard not to be disappointed, but let's face it, being in this game, whether you're a trainer, an owner, a bettor, there are some really tough disappointments, and you have to find a way to keep sight of the successes and not lose sight of them. But listen, it was hard for both of them. Great weekends, but great weekends with great disappointments. Part of the game. And I don't have a chance to be in that. Listen, if you don't ever have a chance to be greatly disappointed in this game, you're not succeeding.
Well, and for those that have been listening all morning, Andy, Steve actually was, you know, for him, ebullient. I mean, he said, I want to recreate, I want to have the same feeling next year, and, you know, at every Derby that I had as they went to the gate on Saturday, that I had, you know, a real chance to win. That's all. He was terrific about it.
Yeah, I mean, he ran arguably the best horse in the race, and he ran
exceedingly well. Yeah.
No, I mean, you can't. Right, it's hard. I mean, you know, the results matter a great deal, but one of the hardest things to do for everybody, and it's sure is to be able to separate yourself from results and to be overly result-oriented. You know,
right.
As a handicapper, it's easy to not be result-oriented. If you're an owner or trainer or rider, you know, that's what matters, the end result. But I think, you know, when you're Steve and Chad and other trainers, you step back and say, it was a great situation I was in, it just didn't work out. You know,
exactly.
Regardless, it was a good weekend of racing. Listen, you have this crazy result, and it's got a lot of attention, and that's not a terrible thing. But I have a feeling that attention is going to just, you know, disappear into thin air in 11 days.
And that's actually the way I kind of framed the start of the show. Before we wrap up, Thursday, very nice card, I think, at a glance, for the 50,000 plus carryover sequence.
Okay. Look. Made most of my picks.
I figured you had. And there's also the first 2-year-old race of the year in New York.
I hope it doesn't scratch down to 3.
It's only 5.
First race or lower level maintenance. Second race in the pick six sequence is an okay turf sprint. Back to the other half of those cheaper maidens. Yeah,
right.
Another small first sprint field. Seems like a manageable sequence. I'm just looking.
Yeah.
You have a heavy favorite in the 8th race in Key Point. And the last race is a bit of a crapshoot, but out of sight, scores to beat. There are some others, though.
Excellent. I got it printed out. I'm looking forward to starting in on the Belmont season a little bit.
You're not already in Maryland?
Not yet.
But at least. I figured.
Why are you like this?
Out of the stall in the State Farm. Who's on now that I'm
taking
time away from?
I kept things open because I knew we might be a little fluid, and we had plenty to cover, so don't worry about that.
Are you upset about Flatter dying?
I just was about to mention that. Flatter has passed away at age 23.
He had a great career.
He did. And he, you know, that's a horse that didn't necessarily, Sid will discuss this tomorrow, I'm sure, but, you know, he was a horse that it was an uncertainty going to stud, and he had protracted success, and in fact, search results sends him out a winner on Saturday or Sunday. Right? She's a flatter.
Yeah. I agree. Yeah, he had a great career. She's been one of his many, many good horses. It's funny. I was noting on the show we mentioned Flatter, and Claiborne's been such a great sponsor. And Claiborne has been with us since the beginning. They have been our, we have a lot of great supporters, but Claiborne has been a great supporter of us. And I was commenting to Lapita Gregg that wow, Flatter was 23, which is amazing. It just shows how old we're getting. But he will be missed. But he had a great long career. You know.
Well, and you look actually at the stallions that, he fashioned, West Coast just getting going, Flat Out, of course, Upstart, who's just an upstart.
Upstart's really taking off.
Yep.
Upstart is really taking off. I was talking about that with Jordan Wyckoff just the other day, actually. We were talking about it. And I think one of the things, I loved Upstart. I felt that he was a really good horse, a little bit off the radar, and he won that really good race when second in the Breeders' Cup, his juvenile. And it's just nice to have a horse out there to make us remember Rick Violet, to have that
exactly.
horse.
Exactly.
Exactly. Yeah, no, it's, Flatter. Flatter will be missed. Tremendous career. Who trained him? Did Rusty train him?
Gosh, you know what? I don't even remember.
Let me look it up on the...
this point. It's been that long.
I don't have a great memory. Let's take a look at his career. He was an AP Indy. He was a Claymore. Oh, he was a Claymore horse. No, Steve Penner,
of course.
Right. Well, he only ran six times with four wins.
Steve Penrod.
His only stake, he ran in. He was third in the Washington Park Handicap. He never ran in New York. Well, Steve doesn't run too many horses in New York. Let's look at some of his leading horses, sound money's a caution. I'll be the flatter search results. These are recent horses they're showing now. These are just recent horses I'm looking at.
Right.
I saw there was a tweet from Claiborne about him where they put up the sort of obituary for him. They talk about some of his 16 Frogs, West Coast, blah, 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 Flat Out, Harris, the Old Queen. Was he horse enough to the test at youth price? Upstart, Kobe's back.
The Old Queen was,
Spark.
Was that?
I think that she was, wasn't she that horse that won the test at a zillion to one, I think.
Is that Mike, was that Mike Pipey or Doug O'Neill?
No.
West Coast, right? West Coast, a West Coast filly.
No.
No?
I don't think so. Ayola Queen, I'll look her up right now. She was trained by Gustave de Delgado.
Oh, okay.
She won the test in 2016. I think she beat that Chad filly that he ran for.
I'm thinking of Turbulent Descent of Piping. Came to New York and won. The ballerina or the she was the ballerina or the test.
Turbulent Descent, maybe both.
Yeah, doing both. Yeah, there you go.
We both. Yeah. I'll look at her chart. She beat that. Was that filly? I bet her. Chad. She ran second. She ran fourth. Louis Bay.
Louis Bay.
Lightstream was second. I think that's actually Louis Bay. Off the Tracks was third. The favorite was Kalina. Well, I think it was Baffert, right?
Kalina.
Kalina. Yeah, maybe it was top. No.
I don't think that. I don't think that was Baffert.
No, maybe Todd. It was Kieran. It was Kieran.
There you go.
So she had won. She had won. She might have won the eight. She probably won the main court. I mean, God, I don't really remember. But it shows her winning on June 10th, so that would make sense. That was the eight court. We weren't really in drag here.
No.
You're plastic. I'm looking at the text. Okay. We don't. Bella Sophia's coming back this weekend, by the way. She went last year. Gamine won the text. Kafeti won the text. Separation of Powers. American Gal, Tale of Queen. Kavorting won the year before. Sweet Reason. Turbulent Descent won in 2011. You know, she was the favorite that year in the Breeders' Cup Billion Bear Sprint and ran. She had a big favorite, and I think she ran like fourth or something. That was a race that was won by that Florida horse at a huge price.
Bill Kaplan's.
Yeah, she won the Ballerina in 2012. Yeah, and she was fifth, but I think she was favored in that race. She was sixth in the Lebrae, so the Desert Storm, the Ballerina, and then she had two bad performances after that. She was second in the Acorn. Oh, she lost the Acorn to, I bet the winner. I think it's Tricky. It's Tricky to beat her in the Acorn, because I bet her. I think she paid fact, that was my birthday.
The best test is Carson Hollow and you.
Yeah. The performance, it was a great, great race. I'm not diminishing it, but the performance by Extra Heat in running second to Victory Ride was also a tremendous horse, speaking of Rusty Arnold. He did train her. That was a great test, too. I mean, she battled at an insane pace and still finished second at seven. Purely from an entertainment standpoint, the U Carson Hollow one was a tremendous race, no question about it. Yeah, that was a tremendous race, I agree. She was really good that day.
It never disappoints. It's
tricky.
Because there's only, how many opportunities are there for 3-year-old fillies to get a grade one?
Well, there's in sprinting or?
Sprinting, yeah.
Well, I mean, there's the test.
Yeah.
Used to be the virus, now it's just the test. Well, the bread.
Well, that's the end of the year. That's a little, that's sort of a.
The counts. It's a grade one for 3-year-old fillies.
Yeah, agreed, but it's sort of.
I didn't know that it was
it's a kind of an introduction to, you know, being an older horse too. It's
it's restricted to 3-year-olds.
I agree.
I think the Acorn is a little bit longer. Because I think the matchup in the Acorn of Echo Zulu is Matt Araya, who won the 8-bell, one to look forward to. I thought Norm's horse had finished second in the 8-bell with Matt Araya. She ran great, and she really showed that performance at the Acorn was no fluke.
I know, and the inclination, I think, was to try to beat her.
Well, she was 6-7-1. I don't know if she finally beat 7-1 shots. Is the way I would look at handicap.
No, not Pretty Birdie. I mean Matt Araya. I personally used her. Well, you know who? Actually, the one horse who I haven't brought up in 2 days yet. The one disappointment I'm sure the Chad is feeling was Gerrymander didn't really show up.
Well, she did have trouble to start and got steady back to last, which didn't help. She ran a mediocre fifth. I think they expected her to run better in that race, but that was a tough situation. I mean, I'd like to have seen her get a clean break. She wasn't going to win. She probably wasn't going to run second, but she could have been a little closer if she had broken cleanly. But, yeah, I think the hope was that she had progressed more from 2 to 3 based on that effort. It's a little hard to believe that's the case. I mean, I guess I'm not sure what you do with her at this point. Maybe you, I don't know if you look at a race like the Jersey Girl at 6, or you look to get her into a dollar as a 2 other than it. I don't know. I haven't talked to Chad.
Well, and, you know, I should mention that it wasn't a stake, but Brad Cox picked a good spot for Juju's Map to try to get her Juju back.
And I think that the expectation was that she, too, would be heading towards the Acorn. I think I read an article that said Brad said that probably she and and Matta Rae would run the A course. She certainly looked good. What kind of numbers did that? She had a number in the high 80s, that's not right?
87 for that. Yeah, that, and then there was that debuting colt of Cox's that wrapped up the weekend, that Strobe, that was sort of everybody kind of was a universal
right.
thing.
To be fair, he got the same figure that essentially got 92 and the horse got 91 as Todd Crusher's maiden breaker in the first race. So I know what
I
meant.
Yeah.
Much more flashy win. He probably met a weaker field. You know, Todd's horse ran a fast race too. That the Constitution
yes,
horse
was
won the first race.
Congressman.
Right. Constantly been talking about a great Strobe brand, and he did run really well. It was an exciting debut. I don't think you should forget Congressman as well.
I agree.
So, you know, it's not... I wonder where Bolling C is. Anybody talk to him? I know that Todd said that American Revolution was supposed to make his return in the commentator, which I want to say is later this month, probably Memorial Day. And what better day for American Revolution to be running than Memorial Day? We can get him
well, I can tell you,
on July, he could run on all the important American holidays. Really? You talk to Todd about that. He's been organized of running all the
I will. That's funny.
American holidays.
That is very funny. Following C has not worked, so I don't think this is too promising.
Sorry to hear that, because he certainly ended his year extremely well. Well, isn't that what is belongs him? He's not a witness. He's
not
a
Spencer.
Well, get to work on that, Steve. All right, 11:57. I think I've done more than my share.
You have been spectacular. An unbelievable effort.
I wish I could
Herculean.
Say
Andy Serling, everybody. Look for him Thursday, America's Day at the Races, which is really America's Day with Andy. That really should be reworked. We were vamping here a little bit at the last 15. We're looking for D. Wayne to wrap up the show, but he's at lunch and he begged off. So we'll look to get Wayne in here as early as tomorrow. All right? Maybe the secret oath decision. One thing tomorrow we definitely will have is the Hall of Fame. Hall of Fame, 11 o'clock. I think 11 o'clock is the big reveal. Ryan Bouye is going to join us. Thanks to Steve Asmussen and Rick Dawson for the visits today, as well as Big and Andy. And we will be back with more. Casey's waiting for the network to send us a set of tapes from yesterday, so that you'll have 6 hours of audio at some point today, both the Monday and Tuesday recap shows. Recap day 3 tomorrow. That'll include Sid. We'll get the Dick's impression and a lot more. Good luck if you're playing today. Indiana. Horseshoe, Indiana. Catch up with them tomorrow, I think, as well, with John Dooley. All right. Thanks, everybody. Good luck. Talk to you in the morning.
Sirius XM Sports presents
the Pons family's Country Life and Berryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and curly stands in Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Defining Rod by Tappan, Osler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the foaling barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning. Learn more at countrylifefarm.com.
The PA Horse Breeders Association introduces the Pennsylvania Stallion Series. 4 brand new races to be run at Parks for PA-sired, PA-bred 2-year-olds. There are 2 $100,000 contests on August 22nd, PA Day at the Races. September 24th, PA Derby Day, has 2 more races, each with a $200,000 purse. The PA Stallion Series, yet another reason why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race. For more, please visit PABred.com.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of working in minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel.